It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. Technical issues, forget them. We don't care. We're here, man. We're ready to go. Pete Carroll Show, the debut for this year, 9:30 this morning. We'll talk about what was a, as I said, strange, fun, and ultimately disappointing loss on the road yesterday, Brock.
Yes, it was. You know, it is a season that I think is one of discovery in so many ways, of so many young players, of this whole program resetting. I think the national pundits, you know, figuring where this team was, what we felt going in, as close as we got to them. And I think anybody felt like going into this year reasonably, this is a 6-10 win team. Right. Above that, going to be probably a reach and everything goes right. Below that, man, you got to have a lot of injuries and things really just go off the tracks, but somewhere between 6-10. And that was one yesterday. If you're going to be a 10 win, you know, you've got to find ways to win out on the road. And you had opportunities to do so in the fourth quarter. You really did. You couldn't capture it. Couldn't find it. Couldn't overcome it. You took the ball away. You had some huge playmaking, Mike, but you know, that's why, you know, teams end up in this league 500, below 500. You just can't capitalize when it really matters. And unfortunately, too much youth to get it done yesterday. And, you know, your quarterback has to when the game's on the line in that fourth quarter. If QB wins has always been a metric, a Mike Salk metric, more than anybody else, you know, you've got to find a way if you're Russell there on those final three drives where the defense gave you some opportunities.
Let's start with Russell. It was a fun game. Let me just say, I enjoyed the game. I understand that that's going to be an unpopular opinion today because they lost and we have to fire everybody and cut everyone else. I mean, Pete should be probably, you know, strung up somewhere and Russell should be hit with stones and we should make sure that Ifedi never travels again. I mean, like, I get it.
You know, people would be that upset if they won too, though, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like there would still be a degree of anger.
Some, but I mean, at the end of the day, winning kind of cures everything.
Yeah.
No, my thoughts on Russell were this. I didn't mind the sacks. I didn't mind some of the misses. Obviously, the pick is not great. But look, all those things are going to happen over the course of a game. I was okay with it. I know you weren't. You were much more critical of his play. He wasn't at his best yesterday, but I thought he was fine. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they were down 3 points with 1 minute left to go, and he had the ball in his hands. I expect a franchise quarterback like Russell Wilson, and I would think that he does too, to go down and get a field goal in that spot and play for overtime. Maybe you win, maybe you lose, but the expectation is with a minute left and the ball in your hands,
agreed,
that you can get a field goal. We've seen Matt Ryan do it with 29 seconds left.
Yep.
You don't even always need a minute.
Nope.
But with a minute, you have enough time to kick a field goal. And unfortunately, when he fumbled the ball away on the snap, I mean, that evaporated entirely. So I can live with the last couple of drives. They weren't perfect. Obviously, he wasn't great, and he tried the spin-a-ram, and that didn't work. I mean, there were a bunch of things that didn't go right for him, and maybe he missed a couple of throws. It's not like he's throwing to the three amigos of John Elway or the Marx brothers in Miami or some of the greatest wide receivers of all time. He's throwing to a half-dead Brandon Marshall, Jerron Brown, and David Moore just up from nowhere. He's not exactly throwing to the greatest group of wide receivers ever put together. He's throwing to nobody, and he's not trusting them, and he's holding the ball a little longer, and that's all fine. At the end of the game, you've got to find a way to drive down the field and kick a field goal.
Yes, you do. You know, and I think I can say here over the next 15 weeks, this team is more than likely going to be in a one-possession game in the fourth quarter, 13 of those 15 weeks. There may be a couple games that, especially if they get beat up and they're just thin and they can't rush the quarterback against elite guys, you may fall behind and, you know, can't dig out of a hole. But I think more than likely, 13 of the next 15 weeks, you're going to find yourself in one possession games. And if you do, Mike, he's got to trust the people around him, because that's what I felt, unfortunately, dissipate over the course of that game. Mm-hmm. You know, that first half was fun. You're right. Even Molly said to our guests that were over there, they're like, this isn't normally how Brock watches games.
No,
he usually kicks the couch. He hits the couch. He storms out of the room. I didn't do that once. At the time of my life, that was so much fun watching these guys make plays. Chris Carson, Will Dissly.
Yeah, was it pretty fun, cut four, when Chris Carson leaped a dude?
Chris Carson back in as the single setback with a slot near side, and Carson gets it, and he jumps over a man at the 10, 15, 20, down the far sidelines and steps out of bounds. Holy mackerel, Chris Carson doing his Skeets Nehemiah impression.
His what?
Jumps right over the top of the defender and picks up 24 and a first down.
Rabel played in the Nehemiah era. That was his nickname, Skeets Nehemiah. Okay. Ronaldo Skeets Nehemiah.
Yeah, he did. I guess I'd never heard the nickname.
How he did that? I don't know. Was that more... Was that more shocking or Uncle Will at 270-plus pounds doing this one?
Russell, play fake, dumps it across the middle. It's Whit Stitzley again, across midfield, 40. He's still moving, 35. He's breaking tackles, 20, 15, 10, 5. Did he get there? No, he stepped out of bounds at the 5-yard line. Uncle Will, for heaven's sakes, 66 yards. Oh, my word. Down to the 5-yard line. Will Disley for president. That ends the first quarter with the score 7, Seahawks, Broncos 7. We'll be back with more from Denver after these words.
Wow.
American Express. Holy catfish.
Don't sleep on the American Express.
Wow. He's just throwing American Express in there at the end.
We've got Gus Johnson memorized, right, on his call with Isaiah. I think after he gets knocked out at the 5, you can memorize every one of those.
Sorry.
Because he emptied the bucket. He dropped every last one of them.
Wow.
As did I. You texted me that moment like, holy cow, how did that happen? I mean, both of those things, and that's the beauty of youth and so many of these young, I think, very talented players. But on the other side of it, over the course of that game, and as it wore on in the NFL, youth gets exposed. And that was some of the challenge. And that's where, I guess, with Russ being experienced. And when I say that word trust, and I'll probably say it more this season, I apologize, than I ever have before. Because he's got to trust new teammates. And, you know, by the way, a bunch of them burned him over the week on the way out.
The old teammates.
The old ones did. He's got to trust a new coordinator. He's got to trust, as you said, a bunch of new receivers. He's got to trust an O-line that has caused him to see ghosts for the last few years and do whirly birds and spin like crazy. And, you know, there are opportunities yesterday to just step up. Don't do that. You actually have a couple legitimate guys. Just step up into that pocket. Trust Jerron Brown, man. You won't ever have it more open. Okay, the third down before the final drive, you will never have it more open in your life. Really, either side. They brought the corner blitz. That's okay. Throw into the blitz. Wide open on the other side. Didn't see it. That's okay. Throw it right off the cut. Jerron Brown catches it, runs for 20 yards. He has a little in route. Like, just those are the plays that he has got to, you know, that he's got to find a way to trust the people around him. He's been able to trust the defense, trust his instincts, trust his unbelievable playmaking ability, which was on display again yesterday with his arm, dropping some dimes down the field. But for this team, this season, in these one possession games, he's going to have to really elevate that trust, I think, of his line and the talent around him. Because if he doesn't, unfortunately, in this league, in those moments, it's not going to be good enough. Because if you think of Matt Ryan, Mike, and you think of all those guys that have delivered, Kirk Cousins last year with a slappy O-line, right? Yeah. Coming into Seattle and just dropping some dimes and throwing some bombs and being aggressive. And
I know, but Brock, as you've mentioned before, I just think Russell, we can talk more about this in a few minutes. He just gets held up to this ridiculous standard.
He does.
Did you watch Matt Ryan on Thursday night?
Ooh, struggled.
He couldn't throw.
Struggled.
He couldn't throw the ball. He looked like Johnny Damon. Like, he couldn't throw.
Hey, that really good-looking guy in the Bay Area, right? The guy that
Jimmy
dates, like, point stars? Yeah,
he's
never lost.
End the game yesterday.
Never lost a game
and
in his life.
And say what you want about Aaron Rodgers. His comeback yesterday was sublime.
Superhuman.
He threw what should have been a game-ending pick.
Yep.
He hit the guy square in the numbers, and the dude from Chicago, Fuller, dropped it.
Yep.
I mean, like, the quarterbacks aren't perfect.
No, they're
not.
And
the game's real hard.
And his margin is less than it's ever been before.
It is very, very small. So yes. I'm not going to be on the kill Russell bandwagon, sorry.
And I hope I'm not there. Is that what that sounded like?
If you guys want to call it homerism or Russell defense, fine, whatever. I'll own it. I'm not going to just kill him because he's not perfect.
Nope.
He's not, and he's not going to be, but I think he's a wizard. And the one thing that bothered me yesterday, and really the only time I got mad, was when that ball bounced off his hands to the ground with a minute left. You can't do that.
Yep.
You absolutely, that cannot happen in that situation. And I think that I could be 100% critical in what you do in the final couple minutes. And other than that, look, there was some good and some bad, and I'd like it to be a little better, and I think it will be as they go. And ultimately, that's what I think about this team.
Mm-hmm.
Some good. Some bad, and the question is going to be how much can Pete Carroll coach them to get them to improve?
No question.
And if he can, this team can win some games this year. They showed that they have some skill in this team.
Oh, and they showed they have some fight, and they showed they're going to play everybody, and they showed it's all hands on deck, and they showed an awful lot of things yesterday, and unfortunately came up just 3 points short in Denver.
7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Seahawks lose the season opener in Denver to the Broncos 27-24. Your final, Russell Wilson had an opportunity, got the ball back with 1 minute to play, no timeouts, down three and a chance to tie, but unfortunately a fumbled snap for no reason and then a false start pretty much ended that one. It was a weird game, kind of up and down. Seahawks did some really good things in this game. Will Disley was a monster with over 100 yards receiving, rumbling, stumbling down the field. Chris Carson looked excellent. And at times their defense looked good. Certainly the return of Earl Thomas was great as he came up with an early pick. But there was also a lot of negatives. The depth was tested and did not exactly respond. They had zero pass rush at all. Their run blocking was once again not really there in general. So yeah, as you watch this one, I think some reasons for hope and optimism and some reasons for some of the negativity as well.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point about over the course of this season, this being a developmental program, right? When we talked about reset, I don't even know if we've ever even gotten back to those words, but that's what they were when they built the thing in 2011, 2012 with young people that just developed. They developed before our eyes and they turned into some of the best players in this league. You know, yesterday you saw Will Disley, you saw Michael Dixon, you saw Chris Carson, you saw some young guys that made some plays that were just like, wow, that's as good as anybody in this league can do it. Now, can you do it consistently enough? And most importantly, Mike, you've got to develop up front. If your identity is going to be a football team that runs the ball and wins at the line of scrimmage, and you felt like coming into this season, one of the things you could lean into was Shamar Stephan and Tom Johnson and Quentin Jefferson and some of your size, Jaren Reed, to stop the run and really own the line of scrimmage on both sides of it. Not good enough yesterday. And that, of all of the areas, has got to be the area of the biggest growth over the course of this season.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
UW improves to 2-0 on Saturday with a somehow unconvincing 45-3 win over North Dakota. I'm not sure how 45-3 isn't convincing, but Jake Browning didn't play all that well, threw a couple picks, and just overall, they didn't look as great as I think people really wanted to. They did fall one spot in the AP poll from number 9 down to number 10 as Stanford gets a big win. Took a 17-0 lead into the half and then blew the game wide
open. I screwed that up. They're 1-1. It's Kyle's fault.
Oh, yeah, 1-1. Did I say 2-0?
I said 2-0.
And we're all like, woo! Yeah.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I'm the one who messed that up.
Cougs win as well. They beat San Jose State 31-0.
And, like, Kyle gave them a better record. If anything,
yeah. Huskies are 0-2. They stink so much. They fell out of the rankings.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Do you want to know why they didn't live up to expectations and why 45-3 doesn't just feel as good as it should in nearly 700 yards of offense? Because the head coach called it pedestrian. He dropped a little Deion Sanders. It was a pedestrian offense. You didn't run the ball. You didn't line up against North Dakota and just whack them. And unfortunately, Myles Gaskin didn't get off. Savon Ahmed, you know, still not getting the number of touches I think that young guy deserves. And those two are going to have to do the deal in Salt Lake City on Saturday, because Jake is just, for whatever reason, trust, comfort, confidence is certainly not where it was a couple years ago. And the supporting cast has got to be better around him come Saturday in Utah.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, we'll double up here. Mariners lose 2 of 3 to the Yankees over the weekend. They're 7.5 games out of the wild card race. Nearly impossible for them to come back. Kind of a disaster. More on them to come probably later in the week. But the Storm up 2-0, so just one more win to clinch their third WNBA championship. I went on Friday night. It was a blowout. Great affair. Awesome environment. Fans excited. Absolute blast to watch them dominate the Mystics.
7.5 games out means less than a 1% or less than a 0.1%, I believe, chance to get into the playoffs, as Oakland just continues to do what playoff teams do here in this month of September. So do the Astros winning the series in Boston and the A's sweeping away the Rangers. Just unfortunately doing the things that the Mariners did in April and especially in May and June when they jumped out to such a significant playoff lead. It's all evaporated and then some, and credit to Oakland and just some of the struggles the Mariners have had. I will say this. I am on Eddie Diaz watch. And Wet Blanket, I think, will join us for the final time tomorrow, that being Jeff Passan. And I will continue to make my case for a team that is 15-plus games over 500. It is for one reason and one reason alone, because every time he gets the ball, it is basically a one-run game. And that guy has been nails and perfect and now finds himself, I believe, 8 back of the all-time record. I don't know if he's going to get that, but he certainly is going to end number 2 all-time in the history of this league. And for this franchise this season, he's the really only reason they're in this spot.
All right, those are three things you need to know. He had a little help from Mitch Haniger yesterday.
Pretty nice catch.
Heck of a catch in the game. Thank you to the texter. It was Chris Carter who said pedestrian.
Not Chris Carter.
Chris Carter. Definitely. That was Chris Carter.
My bad.
Another texter says it felt like a Darryl Bevell called game. I thought somewhat similarly that there were some moments that seemed Bevellian. On the other hand, they had all three timeouts with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
True.
So obviously it wasn't Darryl Bevell. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, you were on the sideline, Denver sideline, watching the game yesterday. What'd you see?
Well, I mean, I saw, I think, some predictability because I think what you can watch is that, you know, the mile-high environment was going to be a problem, the heat was going to be a problem, and the first game was going to be a problem. And then you have so many other elements that are in there as far as injuries, so many young guys that were out there, all those different things that it really kind of pointed to they had to overcome themselves to be able to try to get the win, and they did not overcome all the things that they needed to be able to get the victory.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I generally despise excuses like this, but playing in Denver in September has been nearly impossible for teams over the last few years. How challenging was the combination of the heat and the altitude yesterday?
Well, I didn't see it as close as, say, Jen Mueller did, but I know that there were some guys that were throwing up on the sideline. I know that there were some guys that were struggling trying to get the, you know, try to be able to get through plays and all those different things. And I think it's understandable because particularly, you know, when you're trying to go out there, particularly a lot of the defensive guys, I think you can see there's going to be some problems. So it was a little bit more substitution. I thought maybe they might be able to survive a little bit because they have so many young players that are out there. I mean, this group is just so young that maybe they can overcome it. But unfortunately, a lot of the young guys were affected by it because how do you prepare for something like this? And you go back over the last couple of years, particularly with Pete Carroll, and you see, you know, sometimes when they have a hot weather environment game in first week, you combine that with the mile high, that's going to be a problem because you don't have the durability, you don't have the conditioning, you don't have the preparation to be able to withstand it.
You know, it's interesting, John. You've been doing the sidelines for the Seahawks radio the last couple of years, and you're on the opposing sideline. It'd been fascinating for you to compare if you had been doing it in the years where the Seahawks beat people up, mm-hmm. right, where Marshawn and that O-line just beat people up. Because for the last couple years, I'm sure on that sideline, you felt D-lines almost laughing. Like, I can't wait to get back out there and lick my chops and get more Russell and take on this offensive line. Did you get some of that sense yesterday? Was there any fear whatsoever from the Denver group, the Denver defensive line of what Seattle could do up front?
Not from the defensive line. I mean, because I know that they're looking at the Seahawks offensive line, and you can see that they're going to have problems on the left side because that's where the issue was. But again, what you're looking at is Von Miller. Because, you know, the combination of Von Miller and Chubb out there as the outside linebackers are going to be formidable. And Chubb didn't do too much. Von Miller did everything. And I think you saw several different things where, you know, Von Miller was able to resolve a lot of that spin move type of things that Russell was able to do and then get through and be able to figure it out and place himself in a position where he was going to get the hit, get the sack, get the hit behind the line of scrimmage. So that was one that was really predictable. But, you know, the fear factor, particularly in the right side of the line, wasn't there. You got J.R. Sweezy, who's out and having not done much in practice. You have Jermaine Ifedi, you know, didn't
still
do horrible,
struggling.
But he still struggles. I mean, so there's not going to be a fear factor on that one side.
Did it feel like, John, guys were running for Denver wide open all over the place? TV copy sometimes, you know, can give us a false impression one way or the other. You were on the sidelines. Did it feel like the Broncos receivers were as open as any receivers you've seen against the Seahawks D?
Yeah, and again, I think that's where you see too many young guys. I mean, I still remember one play, I can't remember, I think it was in the first quarter where, I mean, you had the two rookies on the one side.
Yeah, Trey and Shaquem.
Yep. Yeah, Trey and Shaquem, and so they just kind of got confused, and so they got outside of that, and so guys were wide open there, and I think you can see that particularly on some short passes. Now, again, the longer passes, for the most part, I think they're in pretty good shape. But, you know, that's the problem when you have so many young guys. I mean, you think about this. I mean, the whole secondary, and that's why I think it was great for Seattle to get Earl Thomas back. He solves some of those problems because he can at least communicate, but you didn't have all that communication out there, and you're going to have guys that are doing it for the first time in a regular season game, and they're just going to flat out make mistakes that are going to leave some guys wide open.
You brought up Earl Thomas and his return. He looked pretty good, especially early. Obviously, came up with the interception that led to the first score. Now what?
Well, now what? I think that he's embraced himself to be able to come back, and the longer he can stay, and of course he's not going to go anywhere, but I think that now you start to give it about a month or so, and then you start to think, okay, is it worth giving him the contract? And I think that he's put the issue with the holdout behind him, at least from the organizational standpoint. And I think that
Hold on, he has? Didn't he say after the game that Kyle, do we have the sound of him after the game?
All I can do is just, you know, put the best product out there as possible, protect myself until I do get paid.
Protect myself until I do get paid. I wouldn't say he's put it behind him.
No, I say it was still in his mind, but it was on the field. I mean, did you see him flying around?
I saw.
I think that'll be interesting to gauge, and you know, we'll maybe ask Pete about it. He's certainly not going to answer with any authority and say to us what may be said in this building behind the scenes. But John, there has to be an evaluation of is he sacrificing in every single way the way that he always did, or to in his mind right there, like, hey, until I get paid, I'm going to have to take care of myself first and foremost.
Well, let's put it this way. It's not as bad as Le'Veon Bell, who didn't show up.
Very true.
He goes out there with hardly any practice during the week, and what did he have, like 45 to 50 plays, and way more than I think anybody expected, and he was out there when asked, and I think that's all you can ask to do, and he did make plays. I mean, you can see with the interception, you can see that he still flew around, tried to cover some things up. No, I think he accounted for himself very, very well.
Last Seahawk thing here, probably no wild card, because we got a lot of NFL to talk as well, but just the most pleasant surprise yesterday for the Seahawks, in your opinion, was what?
I think the tackling of Trey Flowers on run plays, I thought that was surprising. I thought that, you know, again,
Will Dissly.
Michael Nesley was unbelievable.
Michael Dixon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's
that
not
a surprise.
No, it's no surprise.
Everybody
we've seen that now for the entire preseason and all that. So, but no, I think Dissly, because again, what you're looking at, he looks like Zach Miller. I mean, he just, because he's able to get downfield, he blocks well. I mean, I know that talked to Vance Joseph at halftime, and what Vance was saying is like, oh, so much of it was a missed tackles. No, so much of it was Will Dissly just being able to go out there and make catches and do some big things. I thought that was very, very good.
John, elsewhere in the NFL, I mean, there were some crazy games. Niners lost. We saw the crazy comeback last night from Aaron Rodgers. We saw Khalil Mack looking great for the Bears. What'd you see throughout the league?
Well, the big one, I think, certainly was what happened with one of the comeback of the ages, down 23-0. Aaron Rodgers out there with an MCL sprain, and he goes back and comes back in the game much like Russell Wilson did in 2016, and he gets that victory. I thought that was just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I think what you saw was Ryan Fitzpatrick putting 48 points on the New Orleans Saints, just absolutely incredible in that regard. I think that you can see that I thought it was going to be a step back for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, here it is, as they get Patrick Mahomes. He throws four touchdown passes, 260-some yards, and really looks like he's up to speed on the road beating the Los Angeles Chargers. I mean, I think there was a lot of good things out there on Sunday that really kind of captivated everything.
All right, John, great stuff. No wild card today as we go through all the excitement from the weekend, but your show coming up at 10 o'clock for a whole lot more of this, and you'll be on Danny David Moore at 4. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, John Clayton with us every single morning right at 7:15.
Yeah, big picture, the NFL, that's the weekend they needed.
Yeah, it was good.
There were guys, there was some anthem stuff, but there was not any of that negativity. The Le'Veon Bell, that's kind of distant. It was, oh my gosh, Aaron Rodgers, unbelievable. Wow, some of these offensive plays, defensive players, Khalil Mack, Von Miller, putting on an absolute show. The product, just for the NFL
some of the
at large.
Young guys, they need some of these young quarterbacks.
Yes,
they need Patrick Mahomes
to
be good.
They do.
Quite frankly, they could have used Deshaun Watson playing a little bit better than he did against New England. I mean, they need this next generation. We'll see what tonight
Andrew
looks
Luck
like.
Comes back, makes it through.
He looked
right?
good.
He did.
He was diving and jumping, running around.
Yeah, that was a much better first week product than we've seen in years.
All right, let me ask a very simple question. I'll actually open it up for a few minutes if you guys want to weigh in on this. 206-421-3776. Simple question. How did Russell play yesterday? Very simple. You can take it in any direction you want. What did you think of Russell Wilson yesterday? 206-421-3776. We'll have our answers and yours next on Brock and Salk.
This hour of the Brock and Salk Show is brought to you by Mazda of Everett.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Brock, how did Russell play yesterday?
He played B plus. He played like at 88% to me. B plus. And for years, that was good enough to win. You throw three touchdown passes in his history of those games, three touchdown passes, and I know he had the one pick in the last one. Just I don't even know what that was. Just throw that thing out of bounds or scramble. Or
no, he's just whatever. Throwing it up. The game's over.
He is. So, you know, three touchdowns, one interception at that point, a QB rating, you know, around 100+. He's going to win those games 90% of the time in his 6+ years. Unfortunately, with this team and this margin this season, 24 points used to be good enough. It's going to have to be 27. It just is, and or more. You know, to go out there for him to get it done. He can't put that pressure on himself, you know, and those may be unrealistic expectations at times. And Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees, and go through the list. Matt Ryan, you know, had awfully tough week number ones, and those guys all had coordinators back, a lot of personnel all back around him. He does not. He's got a lot of new. But the faster he gets to trusting them and, you know, being a difference maker in the fourth quarter, the faster they're going to find a few more wins. Yeah. And I think the confidence, well, those guys, Jerron Brown and David Moore and Will Disley, those guys need him more than he needs them. I really do believe it. Those guys need to feel like, yeah, I mean, he believes in me. He can zip this sucker to me at any time. I'm going to elevate. Brandon Marshall, Russell believes in him. There's no question about it. Tyler Lockett, no problem. I'll throw that double move so early, and I'll drop that thing out of the heavens to you on a beautiful 51-yard touchdown. But, you know, he's going to just have to do a little bit more in 88%. I don't know if that's going to win nine games this year. Probably won't.
Yeah, it's funny. He obviously wasn't his best yesterday. We've seen Russell play a lot better than he did yesterday. But he did make enough big plays to make it a game late. He had no one around. I mean, again, we talked about the pedestrian wide receivers a few years ago. You take Doug Baldwin out of that wide receiver room, and all of a sudden, it's an older Brandon Marshall and Tyler Lockett.
But he played good. Brandon played good yesterday.
He played pretty good,
man.
But, you know, he had to push off on a play in the end zone, and he's not exactly Mr. Separation. I mean, you know, you got Brandon Marshall, you've got Tyler Lockett, who kind of does his thing, and then it's, you know, Jerron Brown, who you're just getting to know, and David Moore, and it's not exactly a who's who. He's hitting tight ends more than he's hitting wide receivers. He's dumping off to the running backs.
That's a positive. All that is a positive.
I thought, considering some of the problems around him, he played pretty well. His team gave up more than 500 yards.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me as I'm watching and reading yesterday, and I know Twitter's a bad barometer, but some of the nasty Russell, I was shocked reading the way people were treating Russell Wilson yesterday, although maybe I shouldn't have been. Considering the way his teammates have treated him over the last, and I don't know how much of an effect that article had on him. Do you think it did? I mean, it was just Friday that he was forced to read 12 sourced teammates or ex-teammates, some combination of the group, saying how awful he is and how he's the problem and how Pete loves him and nobody else does. And, you know, that can't be good for your confidence to 2 days later have to take the field probably with some of those same teammates.
Does it bother him? The guy is superhuman Teflon. He is. In his career, he has been superhuman. But
he reacted for the first time on Friday.
That's exactly right. But for the first time,
and I loved his reaction.
Yes, he finally had to respond.
Eventually, the noise is so loud around him that he has to. Okay, no one likes me.
Yeah,
that can't.
And that's
be
not
easy
fair.
For him.
That absolutely, unequivocally is not fair. Will Disley loves him. Justin Britt loves him. Dwayne Brown re-signed here because he loves him. But those turds that they had to flush out of here, or those turdly thoughts that had to be flushed out of here, that was gone.
Turdly.
Yeah, turdly.
I like that.
Yeah, you can use that.
Kyle Turdly.
Yeah. Close.
Is that guy's name?
Yeah.
206-421-3776. See if we can grab a couple of calls real quick. Ryan's in Seattle. Line one. Ryan, good morning.
Hey, morning. So, yeah, I just thought Russell just didn't look like himself, being staying in the pocket.
I thought he did look like himself. Like, isn't that what Russell does? He holds the ball sometimes a little bit too long. He waits to make a play.
He scrambles more. He scrambles more.
Well, there wasn't really much for him to scramble to. I agree with what you're saying. Ultimately, you didn't get to see
the full
package.
He tried to make more plays from the pocket. I would agree with him. He tried to throw a third down comeback there from the pocket where maybe before he steps up, he tried to hang between the tackles a little bit more. Yes, the whirly bird in Yvonne twice. Like, no. Let's just control alt delete that.
I disagree with you. On first and second down, I don't want to see it. On third down, I want to see him do whatever he can to try to make a play, knowing that they have the greatest weapon in Michael Dixon. What's the difference of 5-6 yards? Who cares? So he gets caught for a 10-yard sack versus he throws it incomplete on third down. Yeah. Michael Dixon's going to make up the difference. Do you really care?
Well, in one of those, he had a clear opportunity to just step up.
That's different.
But
people are just
You never want to mute his creativity.
Yeah.
Nope. Don't want to do that.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, but I would say, you know, even to the point where I think I texted you and said, man, I wonder if he got dinged. He got hit in the head a little bit. By the way, he would never let you know. By the way, he would never limp around on a field. By the way, he would never show any of that stuff, and we will never, ever know it. But I thought in that fourth quarter, just some of the cumulative hits, and he took some shots, man. Yeah. Vaughn unloaded on him a couple times. You know, did wear on him just a little bit, unfortunately.
Let's grab Brandon, who's in Bothell line two. Good morning, Brandon.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, man.
I overall think Russell played pretty good. A lot of people on my Twitter are, like you guys are saying, bashing him. But, I mean, Doug Baldwin goes out early. You're throwing to Disley, and, you know, Tyler Lockett looks good. And, like you said, an age Brandon Marshall. And, hey, if the officials got it right on that Demaryius Thomas touchdown, we would probably have the lead and maybe could sustain it. I don't know. And then we're talking about a win instead of a loss.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We'll talk more about the Demaryius Thomas touchdown and what should have happened. I don't know. I think the process was wrong. I don't know that the call was wrong. And so, ultimately, I'm not going to throw that out there as the reason they lost this game.
They're right there, man. He had him right there. And he's going to have him right there.
You got to convert at the end. You can't fumble that ball on first down and the second play of that drive, right? I mean, you've got the ball. That's what franchise quarterbacks do. You get the ball the minute left, you drive down, yep. You kick a field goal, and you live to play another down or another game.
Yeah,
another
they put overtime. That graphic up there, right? Like got 24 it. Fourth quarter overtime comeback drives. He's right up there. Matthew Stafford, surprisingly, is the guy that he's up there with in the NFL, and then they show Trubisky last night won.
Yeah.
You know, like
and
that.
You could see why he was awful.
Correct.
In the final drive.
Yeah, his fundamentals flinch. He's duffing balls. Yeah. And, you know, that's where Russell wants
it. I hate when that happens, when he makes a mistake like that, because I feel like I'm just deprived of the opportunity to see Russell do something yep. incredible, which I'm sure he would have done.
Yep.
Line five, Brandon's in Phoenix. Good morning, Brandon.
Morning, guys.
What's up?
I thought Russell was, I would have graded him as a B, and mostly because I agree with Salk. At the end of the game, if you're a franchise quarterback, you can't fumble the ball. You can't make those silly mistakes. You know, it's his team now, more than any other time since he's been there, and it's his job to drive us down the field and get us into field goal range so Seabass can kick a field goal.
Is it weird to you that it was a fumbled snap? Does that change it at all? Does it make it better, worse, or neither?
No, not so much. I think it was just kind of cumulative of things, and that just kind of was the icing on the cake.
Yeah, that's a good word, man. Cumulative, because I think it was a little bit too.
That's funny. I'd have been so much more upset if he'd thrown a pick in that spot.
Like Aaron Rodgers should have.
Yeah, exactly. Like that would have been nauseating. But there was something about the like it
so fluky that never happens.
Right. It was out.
Never happens.
It was outside the game instead of sort of in the normal flow of what we judge quarterbacks on. And so I guess maybe I'm willing to be a little bit more forgiving on that.
Tolerant.
Yeah, I guess so. It certainly wasn't good.
No, and it and you're right. It just deprived you because you know he was going to step up. He was going to throw a dart. He's going to buy time. He's going to hit Tyler Lockett for 40 yards. And then would Seabass have made a 50-yard field goal?
Well, I don't know about that.
I
think he sure would have liked the opportunity to atone for what he had done early. And, you know, crush him all you want. It's a bad miss. But he hit his, you know, extra points. And other than that, he looked okay. So, anyway, it's a good conversation. It's one that we can probably continue throughout the day.
He looked okay?
Seabass, yeah, they look good. I like the look.
Did he?
Yeah,
that was the best line at the weekend with Shalara.
Yeah.
He looks like he got his uniform off the Target rack.
Pretty much
like
true.
Like a mannequin at Target with toys.
That's just the way they make mannequins look. They just mimic Seabass's body. All right, Coors Light's Blue 42 is coming up next before a full slate of takeaways. Hawks' run game did not look all that different. How come? Brock's got an answer. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42. It's three good football questions. Always good to do here on a Monday following a big football weekend. Come back to the Hawks in a moment. Let's do a couple of college questions to start here, Brock. What's going on with UW's offense? They've put up a ton of points, but just an uninspiring win against a really bad opponent.
Yeah, Chris Carter, pedestrian, man. That's not my words. Those are Coach Peterson's words after that. And you look at the numbers, you're like, are you kidding me? 45 points, almost 700 yards of offense, pedestrian? I mean, is the bar getting, you know, set so ridiculously high? But, you know, it was just 17 there in that first half with Jake. There just wasn't rhythm. This is a group that has to run the ball first, okay? For Chris Peterson, for all of his career, and it's why, and I don't think he'll ever be an NFL coach, but it's why he at least would, I think, transition easier than the typical college coach who's never coached in the league, because he knows it starts at the line of scrimmage. There's no Trey Adams. He's not coming back. He's not walking through that door. They moved a few pieces around just a little bit, but that is a group that has got to set the table. Jake has to have that. He has to. And as much as we talk about John Ross, which was enormous, and that was icing on the cake, but that first year when he played, man, he was comfortable. There was air. There was space. There's guys running free, and he is just a throwing darts back there, and that's just unfortunately not been the case. It wasn't last year. Is he lost trust in the people around him? It's not this year right now where he's comfortable. A couple just decisions, and as Peterson was asked after the game, what is he seeing? Like, what is he seeing out there? And coach, and he'll address it further today because he hadn't watched the tape at that point. He said, I'm with you. I got to see the tape because there's certainly some things at times that, you know, from my vantage point, I'm asking the same questions you are. So you got to get right. Now, Jacob Hayner walks in the game and he goes 8 for 8 and throws bombs everywhere. And that little cocksure, confident guy just walks out there and slings it. So I don't think this is to infinity where he gets every last opportunity this season. He's got to get himself right. And it starts in Salt Lake Saturday night in the most hostile environment in the Pac-12. And I think his most difficult game left, certainly on the road. And he's got to play much better. And the people around him do as well.
All right. Question number two. Cougs 2-0, Brock. They going to get to a bowl game this year?
I said before the season, this is going to be a 4-5-1 team. I can't really see a bowl in their future. Winning at Wyoming opens the door. San Jose State is dreck. They are between 125 and 130 out of 130. And then throw in the next 200 1AA teams, and they're worse than half of those. The team coming in this weekend, Eastern Washington, is better than San Jose State. And Eastern Washington has beaten them, and Eastern Washington will challenge them in every way, vertically, horizontally, in ways these first two opponents have. The best thing Wazoo has done is play defense. So you get to a bowl game on a Mike Leach squad by playing just enough defense. So, yes, they beat Eastern this weekend. I think they've got a better than 50% shot now with the Oregon State's on the roster with some of the dysfunction in the South that they could get to 6. So that's what's on the line, I think, with Eastern. An awful lot swings here and hinges on their ability to go to 3-0 before conference play and play defense this way, play it in any resemblance to the way they have the last 2 weeks. They could very easily beat Eastern on Saturday.
All right, finally, question number three as we bounce back to the pro game for a moment. I was promised diversity and scheme in the run game yesterday, Brock. What happened? Where'd it go?
Didn't feel a lot of that, did you?
Uh-oh.
You saw a little bit more. There were only 3 zone read plays the entire game. There was some toss, right? Even toss into the boundary, which I never like. They tried to
flip 9.
They tried to flip nine. They tried to run a quick hitter. So as far as diversity goes, there was more run game. Efficiency wise, 4 yards a carry. That was aided by Chris Carson's one big run. Efficiency wise, it did feel like the last few years. Like, man, there's just not enough here. There's just not enough where you hand it off twice and you move the chains or you just feel good. And I'll tell you why. My answer has been the same answer I've given you over the last few years. Because when you're a play caller like Schottenheimer on the sidelines and you're watching that tug of war and you're watching that line of scrimmage be reset, and especially on the edges, you're like, I don't feel comfortable running that. I don't want a negative run play. I'm not going to run stretch in some of the great things that set up more play pass because I don't trust DeFetti right now on Von Miller, one of the best defensive players in this league. I don't want to be wrecked back there 7 yards and have a drive killed. I'd rather run it maybe a little bit more conservatively for 1 yard, 2 yards, 3 yards than take any risk in our run game as well because I just don't think they felt good enough on the edges holding up. And if you don't feel good enough on the edges holding up, it's really hard to find any rhythm offensively.
All right, that's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. We do that every morning, of course, right at 7:45.
And you got Von Miller, kind of like Washington got Auburn at the very worst time. You got them, that D-line, feeling good, healthy, with noise, incentivized, everything else. You got that D-line at the very worst time. They'll never be better. right? The big guys up front, Von Miller, before they get nicked up, before they lose Wolf, before they have an injury that inevitably happens to every D-line in this league, they played those guys, Pico and crew, just flying a million miles an hour. And Von Miller showing you, like, hey, you can say Khalil Mack's the best player in this league. I, on my shoulders, won a Super Bowl for this franchise. And yesterday, 3 sacks, 2 tackles for loss, ripped the ball away from Chris Carson.
It was all Peyton.
No.
It wasn't Peyton?
No.
But Peyton won.
Peyton helped.
Oh.
Peyton helped. But it was DeMarcus Ware and it was Von Miller that won that Super Bowl.
Hey, let me remind you guys, Pete Carroll's going to join us at 9:30 as he does the day following every game this season. And every week we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to a Seahawks home game. We do the Pete Carroll show at 9:30 and then, excuse me, later in the day, we'll make a video of one of the highlights of our conversation with the coach. We'll post a link to it on 710sports.com/win. You become eligible to win tickets by watching that video, and then you can gain more entries by doing things like visiting our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram pages here for the station, downloading our app, etc., and then listen Wednesday at 8:15. We'll pick a random name of all the people who entered the contest and announce them as the winner. That person will have 5 minutes to call in and redeem their prize, a pair of tickets to a Seahawks home game. How about that? So, all right, we'll talk to Pete at 9:30, and then later in the day, it'll be up at 710sports.com/win, and you can enter from there and you know, do some of those other things to help yourself and give yourself more options to win. Downloading the app's the easy one, man. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. All right, coming up, Brock, a full slate of takeaways, the good, the bad, the ugly, the in-between. It's all next on Brock and Salk.